The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and Isabel Hardman. So the pressure on Dominic Raab keeps piling on, as today revelations from the Daily Mail shows that call that Dominic Raab rejected to have didn't actually happen with Zach Goldsmith, the junior minister. So in the end, nobody called the foreign minister off the Afghan government. Isabel, do you think that this sort of pressure is just going to keep piling on, and can he actually stay in his role?
Well, I think if he does get through this, which I think is what Boris Johnson will want, he's always very resistant to sacking ministers or asking them to resign, particularly when they are under a lot of media scrutiny for something that the Prime Minister regards as being quite incidental. Then he would join the ranks of the much diminished in cabinet, and there are increasing numbers of ministers who have lost a lot of authority and political capital and goodwill from their backbench colleagues, Gavin Williamson being another example of that. Matt Hancock did look set to be one of those, but he then decided to resign over his affair with Gina Colodangelo. But I think one of the things, talking to Conservative MPs, that has upset them, and it's not so much that he was on holiday when Afghanistan descended into this chaos and the Taliban swept into power in Kabul. They understand that ministers need to have holidays. I think there's a frustration that he seemed to take quite so long to come back from that holiday. I think there was also an emotional response to the story that he refused to take or to hold a call with his Afghan counterpart about interpreters, because interpreters are something that it's an issue that Conservative MPs have been very worried about for a very long time, long before the Taliban's return was something that was being widely talked about. They were already worried about the safety of these people who had really taken huge risks in working for British forces, for the Afghan government, and who would inevitably be regarded by the Taliban as collaborators with an occupying power. And so in the past few hours, Dominic Raab has issued a statement in which he has defended himself, saying that his priority was actually securing the airport for evacuations, and pointing to the number of people who've been evacuated since all of that began, and paying tribute to the staff who've been working on this, and saying that he therefore passed the call to a junior minister, and the call did not take place because the Afghan foreign minister was unable to hold the call because events overtook things, which I suppose is, you know, a reasonable explanation for this. But the trouble is that Conservative MPs are very upset with Raab, not just for the issues that I've just mentioned, but also for the way in which he and Boris Johnson have both appeared not to be in control of events and to not have a plan for what going to happen since returning from this holiday. So I spoke to someone who would definitely be described as a fan of Raab, or would have been anyway, almost immediately after his speech in the Commons on Wednesday night. And their response was, well, look, they don't have a plan. You know, these ministers, these front benches look so small in comparison to the people speaking with authority and knowledge, such as Theresa May, such as Tom Tugendhat, and so on, from the back benches. And I think that's what has upset Conservative MPs, is sort of long term, over the past 18 months, an apparent lack of planning and preparation from the British government for this withdrawal by US troops, an apparent complacency about what was going to happen, a refusal, an avoidance of challenging Joe Biden when he decided to stick with the Trump deal with the Taliban, and a continued chaotic response and a small response in terms of evacuations, in terms of the number of refugees who are going to be accepted and so on to this crisis.
Fraser, do you think that there's like a kind of Westminster-wide, it almost feels like a bit like a witch hunt against Dominic Raab? Not that it's not justified, but just that he seems to be getting it from all sides at the moment, whether it's on the cost of the holiday, which is £40,000, quite a lot for a holiday, or this defence that he's got about Kabul Airport when others are saying actually he had a very high threshold for anything disturbing his holiday in terms of phone calls at all. So it does feel like some people are out to get him.
Yes, but then again, that's politics. If you're a cabinet member and somebody's not out to get you, there's something going on wrong. But I do detect a couple of wider trends here. One is an almost concerted campaign against Dominic Raab himself. The leaks seem to be becoming from officials in his department. Very rare that happens in Whitehall, although the Foreign Office has got a habit of it happening more often than not, which is quite significant. The other thing is that Boris Johnson's government in general is losing credibility with its backbenchers. That's why these attacks are a lot more common now than, say, they would have been a few months after the election. So the backbenchers are frustrated by the consistent number of blunders going on in the government, by the failure of to capitalise on the vaccine effect and all sorts of other mistakes which have been made. And the idea we're getting this week, certainly, as Morton Moreland beautifully depicted it earlier, is this government where there's more talent in the back benches than there is in the front benches. So this is the backdrop, and I think that's more important than what Dominic Raab did or didn't do wrong. I mean, let's face it, of all the things that ministers are doing wrong right now, going on holiday in August is hardly top of the list. Dominic Raab, as far as I can work out, decided to come back on Sunday. On Sunday morning, it wasn't clear at all that the Taliban were going to take Kabul. They were basically at the gates, but they thought they'd be for another 2 weeks. Then on Sunday evening, they did take it. So it happened so quickly. The whole world was surprised. America was surprised. And I think it's such a dramatic moment in world history that, of course, there is a natural desire by politicians to look at the British government, thinking, look, why was our intelligence so bad? Why were our ministers not more prepared? And the answer simply is that everybody was caught by surprise. This was primarily an American withdrawal. And you are going to get moments where things do not go in the way that the government anticipates. But finally, taking holiday, you can, as I know from bitter personal experience, be very heavily involved in work when you're on holiday. You can get calls the whole time. You can be sitting by your desk. I mean, if you can work from home, you can work from holiday. So I do think the geographical displacement isn't as big as it was recently. We learned today there's all sorts of heads of civil service are on holiday right now, all of whom are perfectly capable of working from their desk or where needs be. So I do think part of this is a Westminster kind of hunt the minister reindeer game. But there are wider trends behind it. Those trends are not good for Dominic Raab and not good for Boris Johnson.
And Fraser, on that surprise about how fast things happened as well, we're still seeing the fallout of that, because what's happening in Kabul of people trying to get out it just shows that no one was quite expecting this, and it's absolutely chaotic.
Yes, so we are still seeing, I think, quite a harrowing, chaotic picture from Kabul Airport, which is where evacuations are taking place of British and American nationals and also people who have helped foreign forces or worked with the old Afghan government, trying to get them out of the country as well. So the US State Department issued an instruction to people to come to Kabul Airport as quickly as possible earlier this week. And that has meant a lot of people making a very dangerous journey in and of itself to the airport, having to go through a number of Taliban checkpoints, showing documents to the Taliban, which they fear might highlight them as a sort of high value target, as the Taliban see it, as a collaborator with the occupying forces in the country prior to the Taliban's return. When they then get to the airport, there seems to be being a scramble to get on flights, to have the right documents. There are people who don't have the right documents, but who say that they were told to come to the airport. So there's a lot of chaos and a lot of fear there. And I think we can see from some of the reports coming out of the airport just how desperate and frightened people are. You would not hand your baby over a fence to troops asking them to save your baby unless you thought that the life that that they would have, or the death that they would have with you, was too much to contemplate. And that is a horrifying thing to see. Similarly, we've seen reports that one of the men who tried to climb aboard a plane as it was taking off from Kabul airport, who then fell to his death. His name was Zaki Anwari and was a member of Afghanistan's national youth football team. Now, it's been pointed out that the Taliban used Kabul's football stadium for public executions and for shooting women in the head the last time they were in power. So you can understand why somebody who had played in that stadium would have seen their return as being particularly frightening, and why he would have taken that measure that is just so obviously so desperate. And so there are a lot of questions about whether flights are leaving with their seats full for the different countries, about what is happening to people who are able to get out, where they are going. There are some reports about the conditions in the different countries where they are landing, because not all of them are coming straight to Britain or straight to America. The conditions there being very, very difficult, and they're not being running water, I've heard from one social media report. So it is still very chaotic, and there is still a lot for governments to do, particularly given it's not clear how long Britain or the Americans will be able to stay largely in control, whatever that means, of Kabul airport.
And Fraser, finally, while we're all focused on Afghanistan, case numbers of COVID are ticking up again in the UK. Can you talk about what's going on there? Are we facing a return to what we were having earlier this year?
I'm afraid to say there's a fourth wave, or a fifth one, depending how you count them, is now terrifyingly plausible. Ministers looking at Israel, one of the most vaccinated countries in the world, and Israel is facing a surge in COVID infections right now, and in hospitalizations as well. Now, this has really changed the thinking in Westminster a lot more than has been publicly picked up. We've gone from thinking, okay, this will be the summer where we get rid of COVID. There's going to be an exit wave, and after that, it shouldn't be a problem. That has now been replaced by a new hypothesis. Look, the vaccinations are not as much protection as we thought. There are studies yesterday come from Oxford University showing that if you get the Delta variant and you're double jabbed, you can have just as much COVID in you as if you weren't jabbed at all. So this is why the Americans, for example, have now said it's no longer acceptable for the double jabbed to go around not wearing masks in environments where they would otherwise be masked, because the vaccine doesn't give you as much protection as they originally thought. So basically, the mental map of this is being redrawn in ministers' heads. And we're looking forward to, and not looking forward in a sort of positive way, they're looking at an autumn where there is another wave of COVID compounded by a wave of flu. Now, this will be a real problem for the NHS. Flu, it brings it to breaking point at the best of times. But if this is combined by an Israeli-style increase in cases in a country which has got, where 94% of adults have got antibodies, something we didn't really think was possible until we saw what was happening in Israel, then it does raise some pretty scary scenarios. So that's why the vaccination, the booster jab people are going to be getting, is going to be a flu jab as well as a COVID jab. And ministers are preparing to do everything they can to stop a capacity crisis in hospitals, which might very well happen if we do end up getting a COVID plus a flu double whammy.
Well, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that in future Coffee House Shots. Fraser and Isabel, thanks very much.